Watching Mark Morris's dancers flow across the stage, you could almost see the music take form. His company has been bringing music to a different kind of life for nearly 30 years now, and you can experience them at the Opera House at the Brooklyn Academy of Music next week from Tuesday through Saturday. There's One World premiere, Socrates, which is set to music by Eric Satie, and the New York premiere of Lucky, which features music by Kyle Gann. It's always a delight to have Mark Morris join me in the show, and I'm very pleased to welcome you back.
Thank you.
In a recent interview, you said, "I'm a musician and my medium is dancing." Was there ever a chance you might have become a musician who played music professionally?
No. I thought I might have been the world's best cellist at one point, but I never, ever played one note on the cello.
But you do read music.
Yeah, I read music. I can sight sing badly. And I conduct, and I don't play any instruments.
So, but that means you probably know a bit more about music than most choreographers who come to it straight through dance.
Well, I don't know. You know, it's hard to say because the way I have chosen to choreograph with music, devoted to music, is one that is, it's one way to do it. There are many ways to make up dances. Since I work with music all the time, I figure I should know. I also love it. That's why. So, there are many good pieces made up to, in different ways with or against music.
Well, we all, to some degree, respond to music when we tap our feet and mm-hmm. wiggle in our chair. But, of course, with you, it's going a lot further. Can you remember the first piece of music that you responded powerfully to?
Oh, my mother said, my mother's not with us anymore, but she said that I would bounce to music when she sang Shortening Bread. This is a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And I think I was pre-ambulatory. I think I was just hanging on to something and bobbing to music. But that was the first tune.
So it goes
tune,
all the apparently. Way back.
I think it's just neonatal, yeah.
Are you listening to music all the time? Do you have an iPod that you listen to?
I use my iPod more as a paperweight. And, it's something to leave in taxis. But, no, it's interesting because I study music all the time. I'm looking for music. I listen to music a little bit recreationally. I used to listen to music every waking second of my life. And now, I think partly because I only work with what is called live music. I mean, mm-hmm. I call it music, but it's with living people. I do all my rehearsals and classes are with music. And so I sometimes spend time with no soundtrack in my apartment, silence, which is kind of great.
Well, after all this talk about the importance of music, doesn't The Season also feature Behemoth, a work from 1990 that is set to silence?
Oh, yes, there is that, yeah. So that's a dance I made up in Brussels 20 years ago or so, and I wanted to see if I had the chops to make up a dance that didn't have music as its base.
Oh, I thought it was a chance for the musicians to catch their breath.
Nah.
You said that you listen to music sometimes just for the sheer fun of it, but mm-hmm. most of the time you're looking for things. What is it in a piece of music that would intrigue you and make you think that you might use it for dance material?
Well, let's say that musicians call it a hook, so it can be anything, something a little slightly surprising, unusual in the orchestration, in a chord change sequence, in in subject matter, like every piece of Mozart has something in it that makes you go crazy, and doesn't mean you have to dance to it, but it means that there's something so unique and surprising about every piece of music. There's a lot of music that I get a big charge from that I'm never going to choreograph. I just love it.
Or are there pieces that you have been intrigued by but can't figure out how to do it?
Oh, yeah. I worked off and on for maybe 15 years on the 2- and 3-part inventions of J.S. Bach that was eventually choreographed by Jerome Robbins. And I would start every few months trying to make up a dance of these, and it just never happened.
Well, you do work with the music itself. Some mm-hmm. Choreographers seem to work across the music. Mm-hmm. You work with and within the music. So
right.
I would think certain things like Bach might actually be leading you at times too much.
Oh, no, not a bit. I mean, it leads me to make up a dance that I want. You know, I don't do a lot of big symphonic music from the 19th century because it's not, I feel like there's already too much there. Mm. It's too programmatic, a little bit too bossy that way. But otherwise, Baroque music in particular is full of opportunities and open.
Although you also have been using modern music. We opened with something from the Erik Satie.
Mm-hmm. That recording is available in, you know, what do you call that, a retread, reissue, and it's the great Swiss tenor Hugues Queneau. So it's a wonderful piece of music.
So do you have a singer as well when you perform it?
Yes. Well, this is a world premiere, a Socrate. The music is Socrate. I'm calling it Socrates because it's easier to say, and you know, I'm not spitting as much on the radio. It doesn't matter. The pianist is Colin Fowler, who's my part of my music ensemble and plays for my rehearsals and is great, and the fabulous French tenor Jean-Paul Fouché-Court, who's here in town to sing with me and with City Opera.
When you hear something like this and decide that you want to create a dance around it, do you see things in your mind or do you feel them with your body?
I first dealt with this music a very, very long time ago, 80-something, and I choreographed the last movement, which is called The Death of Socrates, in a recorded version for orchestra and soprano, and I made up a dance. I couldn't afford to get the score, so I made up my own system of how to break it down in order to learn it. So I choreographed it once. It was for six men. And then I've always loved the music, and I decided to go back to it. And so I choreographed the whole piece, which is three movements long. It ends still with the death of Socrates. And I'm doing the piano tenor version instead of the orchestra version. You know, it's a beautiful, beautiful text. And I'm revisiting this music, having not even looked at the old piece. I don't remember anything about it. So I'm making it up afresh.
How important is the text for you? Because some choreographers are more programmatic than others. Some really do like it to be as abstract as possible.
Well, let's see. I figure if you're going to do something that has text, you ought to know what it is.
And they should be acting it out to some degree?
Not necessarily, but I mean, the choreographer should know and the participants should know. You needn't act it out. You can do whatever the hell you want. In this case, I'm making the radical move of supplying super titles during a dance. So it's in sort of old-ish French. It's a little bit clumsy, the French. And of course, there are no repeats. It's a long, long linear narrative of great, great beauty and subtlety. So sometimes we can refer to it or not. So, you know, there's a gesture language and, you know, everyone finds meaning by watching and listening.
And this will be the world premiere?
Yes.
You're also going to be giving us the New York premiere of Lookie by a New York composer, Kyle Gann.
Right.
Did you commission that piece?
No. The dance was commissioned for the ICA in Boston, the opening of the new wonderful contemporary art gallery there. And so the room there was very small, and it was challenging to put musicians there. So I decided to have a piano with no one playing it. And Mr. Gann wrote some gorgeous music that's played on a disclavier.
And we will hear that when we go out.
Yeah, there's a beautiful waltz that's happening. So that music, you know, it was kind of, there's no room for musicians, therefore I won't use any. So it's a gorgeous piano playing itself. The music, you know, Kyle is a great expert on Conlon Nancarrow, the wonderful player piano composer. And so there's a certain homage to his manic and gorgeous music in there.
So the music is always the same, at least with the piano, the player piano.
That's right.
You do, even though you have mostly live music or silence in one case, you do one dance to recorded music by Bob Wills and his Texas Playboys.
That's right. Because that particular recording was made right before Mr. Wills died in the early 70s, and nobody plays it like that. They're great. So on occasion, that does give the musicians a break.
I'm talking to Mark Morris, whose company will be at the Brooklyn Academy of Music in the wonderful Opera House. I say that because so often when we talk about BAM, we're talking about things that are happening at the Harvey,
right,
the other great venue there.
No, this is the wonderful Howard Gilman Opera House.
And it's Tuesday through Sunday next week.
It's Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
And people can find out all sorts of information about the schedule and ticket information on our show page at WNYC.org. I mentioned earlier that you'll be celebrating your 30th anniversary, your company 30th anniversary, what, in the fall?
Starting in the fall, we make it sort of a season, a big season for 30th. So it's, you know, a little bit before and a little bit after, so we can get in a lot of cities and a lot of performances.
And in the early days, it was almost like a pickup company of people from Seattle, some people from New York when you came here.
Yeah, it was, well, it still is friends, but, you know, now they're half my age instead of my peers. But, it was other dancers I knew from dancing with other companies or class or from everywhere.
When you look back at some of the earlier things, you see major changes? Are there periods of Marc Morris?
Oh, let's see. Good, better, even better.
And now best.
Yeah, well, no, I don't know. Best is yet to come. But no, I think dance critics and audiences can look at my work and say, oh, of course, that's from the Brussels period, or this is from the early Seattle. I don't know myself. I just try not to make up the same dance twice in a row.
Well, do you think having your own space, which you do in the Brooklyn Academy of Music area, mm-hmm. Has had an influence?
Oh, absolutely. It's a miracle. We're in Fort Greene. I have a building that has 7 studios. I have an enormous school with close to 1,000 students. Other companies and choreographers can rent this beautiful studios for very cheap, and it can convert into a theater, the big studio. But I work in a studio that's about 60 by 60, and it's bigger than most stages, so I save a lot of time in the preparatory work that goes into going to a new theater because I can make it the size I want. It's a miracle. It's wonderful.
Now, your company would be described as a modern dance company, but you've done a lot of choreographing for ballet companies.
Right.
Do you bring the modern dance sensibility to the ballet, or do you separate the ballet approach? Because you're dealing with different dancers who are trained differently.
Absolutely, and I'm trained that way as well, and I like it very much. So when I approach a dance, first of all, we call it modern dance, and we call it the ballet industry, and we call it a lot of things. It's really dancing, and I bring my approach, which is a very detailed observation of music, to whatever I'm working on. But, you know, a ballet company looks crappy doing the stuff that my company does. Actually, my company would look gorgeous doing some classical ballet.
Well, you have some of your dances go on point.
That's right, when they're compelled to. But, no, really, I make up the dance on the people who are there. I love point dancing. I love the men and women technique in ballet, which is quite different one sex from the other. And in my company, it's much more, people can do the same thing better.
Now, next week, next Monday, in fact, Laura Lubavitch, whom you performed with, will be here. Were you influenced by people like Laura and Elliot Feld?
Well, sure. Yeah. And they're, you know, I worked with both of their companies long ago, and they're both wonderful artists, and I know them, and we're friendly. And
is there something I should ask him next Monday?
Oh, I don't know. Well, I can't say. I can't say.
Maybe
that.
Later you'll give us an idea. Something that.
But Lara's been working at my studio. I looked in the window the other day, and it was Lara. It's like, wow, that's great. And so, of course, but, you know, everything I've ever done and everything I've read and everywhere I've been is an influence. And certainly, you know, I recently choreographed some music, some Scottish songs arranged by Beethoven. I started a dance to those, and I remembered as I started working on it that Elliot Feld had choreographed a lot of those, and I was in it. And I kind of forgot, just because it was a long time ago. I wasn't, you know, blocking a memory. It was like, oh, that's great. It's kind of, you know, a salute. I like that.
Next Thursday, the 25th, you'll be giving a talk with Mario Batali at BAM. Did you know him back in Seattle?
No, we didn't cross in Seattle. But we know a lot of things in common, and, you know, I've known him for a long time.
And what will you be discussing?
I don't know. You have to come. Probably dancing and food and whatever else we want to talk about.
You have to watch your diet if you're a dancer.
Yeah, that's right.
I want to thank you so much for being with us again, Marc Morris, who I think the first time you came on the show was at least 20 years ago, right before you went to Brussels.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been my great pleasure to have watched your career grow and grow, and for you to become one of the greatest choreographers in the world over that time. Maybe you were great even then, but become recognized
anyway.
I was
nascent. Yeah.
And the Marc Morris Dance Group will be at the Brooklyn Academy of Music the 23rd through the 27th, including somewhere down the line, a conversation with Mario Batali.
Right.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks a lot. Good to see you.